So I don't know how well that worked for you, or if you even tried to feel the physical response in the body to the thoughts in your mind. I find that is a useful exercise, in particular because I want to talk about something where that sort of awareness is needed, in my opinion, to get a little bit of a better grip on that subject. And that my subject tonight is going to be anxiety, fear, terror, all the things that make us anxious and becoming more and more anxious, becoming fearful, and in the extreme being paralyzed with terror, panic attacks, whatever happens in the mind. So the animal kingdom has that one advantage, because they usually react directly as a response to something. They smell the predator, they see the predator, or they feel the predator somehow, and then they react by fight or flight, or sometimes even with being frozen, if they're good in camouflaging themselves. So I'm pretty sure most of the higher animals, they're going to experience fear as well. It seems to be an inevitable condition of being alive, having a body, of sort of having this feeling of there is something and not nothing. There's a self. I don't know how far that goes in the animal kingdom, but I'm pretty sure all the higher animals, they have feelings and they have perception, so they have their khandhas as well. And so they have to deal with that. And the response to the threat is obviously fear, and then running away, hiding, or standing up to your enemy. The problem that comes when we learn to think in language is that our realm of anxiety and fear is almost limitless. Just giving the whole subject a bit of thought, I sometimes felt just overwhelmed by how much possibility for anxiety there can be in the mind. We can be scared of almost anything. Can be scared of germs. Can be scared of closed spaces, of open spaces, of other people. Can be scared of girls or boys. Can be scared of ourselves, of our own mind, of our own thoughts. Can be scared of all the ideas that have been put into our mind, how we're supposed to behave, what we're supposed to believe. And if that doesn't work out for us, another fear is created. So the possibilities in this thinking mind is endless. Absolutely full of terror. Humanity is probably not going to survive. In a few billion years, the sun is going to become a red giant and the earth is going to be swallowed up. Poof, that's it. Anything that you ever knew, anything that was ever created here, that ever grew, that was ever born, any physical thing here is going to be gone. Whoa. You might think, oh, I'm not going to be around anymore, so who cares actually? Oh, you might, you don't know. So now we have this attack in New Zealand. Do we fear retaliation now? Huh? Some crazy guy coming into the hall here and shooting us? Huh? Possibility. So what do we do? Do we get some armed guards? Do we get some metal detectors here to protect us? Huh? How far are we willing to go for this sense of security? How real is that threat? Huh? Is a tiger just around the corner, or the wolf that we have to run, or is it just in our imagination? Or do we have trust in our karma? Huh? Our karma, karma vipaka, is going to protect us. We were good people. Huh? Bad things don't happen to good people. Oh, bullshit. So, to decide what is the real threat out there, huh? How do I protect myself? How do I protect my family? Huh? It's in America, I don't know how many people decide to have a gun in their home to protect themselves and their family. On the other hand, it's exactly the same guys, they're Christians. And Jesus says, if somebody slaps you on the right cheek, you offer him your left cheek, or the other way around, something like that. Obviously, that's not what they're doing. I'm going to get the bigger gun. Somebody comes that they're going to be able to shoot first. Does that give them more security? Are the guys with the guns happier? Do they feel safer? Huh? I don't believe it. I really don't believe it. I mean, if you have the feeling that you have to defend yourself already, that is already a very insecure and a very defensive mind state, huh? A very unpleasant mind state in itself already. And we're so far, we're lucky, we're not living in a war-torn country where these threats are imminent, where we really have to fear some group with the big guns are going to come in any moment, or they're using us as shields, like in Syria or whatnot, that they the enemy cannot just bomb them away. The guys with the big guns, they cannot react the way they want, because there are so many civilians there, and you're somewhere caught in the middle then. And obviously that is a very scary situation. Huh? But a lot of people come out of this situation and they're more or less all right. Huh? Some people in Australia, they might have the fear of losing their job, or they have an exam. And they're completely terrified. Huh? They're paralyzed. They're anxious and they can't sleep. So is their fear less real than the fear of the family that sits somewhere in a bombed house actually, and they hear the shooting at night? Huh? Is their anxiety more real than the fear of somebody who is supposed to be in relative safety here? And that's a stupid question. Huh? It's the fear, the anxiety, the terror is as real as it is in your mind. Will always be as real as it is in your mind. Huh? Predicting future events puts us in that position. And we just have to live with a human being with this knowledge that something can go wrong. Huh? Possible that we not survive the night. Huh? Some of you might die on your way home. Huh? quite a few of you might not live through the next year. I might not live through the next year. So this certainty is just not a part of the deal, having a body. So realizing that this fear cannot be tackled just by trying to protect ourselves. What do we have to do? We have to build an atomic bunker. Then we have to store enough food to live for 6 months at least with our family in the bunker when the bombs fall. And then we have to get obviously some nice weapons, because otherwise the other guys who sit in their bunker and come out later after the Big Bang, there's going to be conflict. They're going to be the tough guys, and we're going to fight for the resources. So how far are we willing to go for this sense of security? And getting a little bit of an insight that the problem can't be tackled in this outside world was just thinking, what did the Buddha say about that stuff? Did the Buddha say fear is a thing that is negative that we should overcome as quickly as possible? And that's actually not what he said. We have this hiriyotapa, fear and shame. And a pretty free translation is this fear and shame is the glue that holds the world together. And coming from a Christian background, I was a little bit disappointed from that. Because I thought this fear and shame stuff is coming from the church, basically to control people. But thinking about that, what would happen without fear in us? Why do we need all these laws in the country? People need that fear that if you do something that is not allowed, then there are consequences. Because we're not all great human beings. We cannot all live peacefully and happy and in harmony the whole time. Some of us, they are going to step over the line. And when the fear is gone, then the restraint is gone. Often. And people, then it's the anarchy and the rule of the strongest. I remember in the monastery they started feeding the kangaroos with the leftover rice and stuff. And I don't know how good that is for the kangaroos anyway. I don't think it's a very healthy thing for the kangaroos to do that in the first place. But what happened was that the kangaroos, they lost their fear, or basically their greed for the food overcame their fear. So they came closer and closer to the area where people offered the food for the monks. And then you have these kangaroos coming, and people are standing there with the rice, and the kangaroos are going, ah, ah, ah. And there are little children around and whatnot, and they're dangerous wild animals, actually. And what keeps them in check is the fear. The fear that better not come too close. This is the human area here. So we had to put up all these signs not to feed the kangaroos. This was getting dangerous, the situation. So we cannot just say, "Oh, fear is just a byproduct of living, and should make sure that we get rid of it." It has this quality of checking up on us, on all our negative impulses, that we fear the consequences of our actions. And shame is a very powerful one as well. It is basically to feel ashamed of something that we do. That is often even more powerful than the consequences of going to prison. If we lose our reputation, if people think less of us, if they look down on us, if your own parents look down on you because of your actions, or you have the fear that they do, it's terrible, can be a great motivator not to do stuff. Shame, fear and shame, binding the world together. Without that, we have to be honest enough to see there would be chaos. Even the monks need 227 rules to live more or less in harmony together. 227 rules. A lot of rules, huh? And it was not that the Buddha said basically, oh, here you have 227 rules, now follow them. It was they were living with no rules. And then people did some stuff that was harmful for the community, harmful for themselves, harmful for the reputation of Buddhism. And then a rule was established. So, and then ended up with so many rules. Even the monks at the Buddha's time, not pure enough, the people who joined into that community to live together without rules. And there are the stories of Buddhas basically who didn't give out rules. And the story is that in this previous Buddha, previous teachings of the previous Buddhas, that the teaching didn't last very long. Sort of the rules seems to be a bit of a guarantee that Buddhism in that form lasts a little bit longer. But also it brings the problems with it, the fears, the anxieties over being in robes has its own anxieties, obviously. So not seeing that as fear is a necessary consequence from a biological point, the next thing is I looked at the First Noble Truth. And then when the Buddha defines suffering, it's exactly at each and every point for me was I could attach anxiety, fear, terror to it as well. It's exactly the things we fear. Birth, old age, sickness and death. Birth, obviously we don't fear because we can't remember. But I think it's a very traumatic experience. Even when in the Hollywood movies they always make it so beautiful and whatnot. It isn't. It's a painful experience for the mother, for the child. Sort of embarrassing. All the gunk that comes out together, 80% of the women, I think, they squeeze out a little dookie as well when they give birth. So, for the ones who haven't given birth yet, something to look forward to. Poop in front of your nurses and doctor and your terrified husband or boyfriend, actually, who will be traumatized for the rest of his life. Well, I painted worse, but it's obviously not necessarily the experience that people hope it to be. It's painful, and the baby when it comes out, it doesn't smile. I think they have to learn that, and it takes many, many days, sometimes weeks, before they start smiling. But they start crying immediately. Actually, that's usually the sign that the baby is alive. So that seems to come easier. But if we see the consequences, then we can see, oh, there's anxiety and fear involved in that. Birth, because birth brings with it old age, sickness and death. Old age can be feared. Sickness can be feared. How much do we do to keep the body healthy? How much anxiety goes with it to keep it healthy? If there's something wrong, if you have a shower and there's a little lump underneath your arm, first thing, cancer. What? Just terrifying. How many things can go wrong? And then death. What do we fear more than the unknown? Nothing. Unknown is the most terrifying. Often people, when they're really sick, but they just don't know what's wrong with them, and then they get some doctor or some professional gives them some sort of diagnosis, and they figure out you have this and this incurable disease. They actually feel a sense of relief, even when they hear it's an incurable disease. Just the knowing, the naming of that something that you have, disease, giving it a name, giving it a cause. Not this terrifying, not knowing what is wrong with me. Well, sorrow, grief, lamentation, pain and despair. Part of the first noble truth, defining suffering. We fear all of them. Sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief and despair. All great sources of anxiety, obviously. Can feel that, our mind can run around that. So that is the condition we're in, through birth. Automatically we're involved with sorrow, pain, lamentation, grief and despair. And being united, what we don't like, being separated from what we like. Terrifying. Part of our fear. Being united with what we don't like. People we don't like, situations we don't like. Being separated from the ones we love. Through distance, through sickness, through death. Whatever it is, whatever we love and is separated from us is suffering. And we fear the loss of that. And then not having our wishes fulfilled, obviously, big fear. So I could find in the description of suffering from the Buddha, I could also find the description of fear. And knowing now that fear in itself is not the problem. Who is fearless? The only one fearless is the one who has attained the end of suffering. As long as we perceive ourselves as a me, and we have a mind, then we're going to have fear. That's what we have to live with. So how can we change this perception in the mind into something where we're still able to recognize an immediate danger, but we're not afraid constantly in this spiral of anxiety? And worry and sleeplessness, where we have that awareness to distinguish what is a real threat here right now, and what is this imaginary thing that I can't do anything about. So I try to do that meditation with you tonight, because I think if you are aware enough and have a look, what is fear? I give you an example. I had to do my lung x-ray. It's quite a few years ago now, actually, when I was still on a religious worker visa. So every 2 years I had to get this x-ray. They check if you don't have tuberculosis, I think, Rachel. Yeah, that's the major disease they're looking for. And so I had this lung x-ray, and it came back, and they told me, oh, we have to make another shot, and we have to see you again. There is some sorts of spots on your lung. And the immediate reaction wasn't very strong. But then I came back to my hut and sat down in the seat. And this thought came up, oh, lung cancer. Huh? And then this feeling of fear immediately connected to that thought, huh? Lung cancer. And because I like to look at things, or I have learned that it's good to have a look, close look at things when they're happening, instead of, oh, fear, and I don't want fear or whatnot, it was basically, oh, fear, how does that feel? And so it felt like somebody sitting on your chest, somewhere in the middle, almost in the region of your heart, but in the middle. The breathing was constricted, and it was sort of a shivery feeling, but it wasn't painful. That was interesting. So I had a closer look, and then sort of, and in the moment that I looked at that fear, it basically became something warm and nice and non-threatening. So the feeling itself wasn't a problem. That was for me a big realization. The feeling of fear wasn't the problem at all. The act in the mind that usually happens when something like that comes up, this immediately trying to push it away, another something tries immediately to run from that feeling, not wanting it, and then obviously the proliferation in the mind. What is if I have lung cancer? Oh, then I have to have an operation. Do I want the operation? Do I want the chemo? How long do I have to stay in the hospital? Blah 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 blah. It goes on, and the mind goes on that. On that journey, the thoughts, they go on this journey of fear. And to have that awareness in the moment to see, not sure, that is not sure what is happening there. Just now you had this one thought and fear coming up. Looking at fear passing away. Nothing more than that. But if that awareness is not there, is not present in the mind, then the thoughts just go on. They go on and proliferate about things that we cannot control. Another incident I remember was the first time in Thailand in the monastery. I come from Germany, and the biggest spiders are maybe like that in Germany. Where if you have a spider like that, like then you put your middle finger and your thumb together, and whatever is in the middle in that circle, that's pretty much the biggest size you find in Germany. And if you find something like that, you go already. But in Thailand, in the hut, there was for me this gigantic creature, like the size of a hand, sitting on that wall. And I just remember how many evenings and hours I spent thinking, when I go to sleep and I wake up, what happens if that creature sits in my face when I wake up? I knew already it wasn't a tarantula or whatnot, so I knew already it's not going to be incredibly poisonous or whatnot. But just this aversion against this hairy creature, what that was creating in my mind. And then I just one evening I just thought, what does actually happen when you wake up and that spider sits in your face? You're going to go, and then the spider is going to fly somewhere and you have a little bit of a shake, and that's it. How much suffering am I willing to take for this anticipation of something that might never happen? And that is this reality check has to come sooner or later in the mind. If you find yourself going into this anxiety and fear spirals, the sooner the better. Is it true? How bad is it going to be? Can I be sure? Can I be sure of what is happening? And then, obviously, with some situations, they're going to be unpleasant. And we know we can't escape them. For example, sitting here and giving a Dhamma talk. I really didn't want to do that. And, well, I cannot say that Ajahn Brahm made me. Also, you feel, if he asks you to do something, and he usually doesn't ask you for much, it's sort of very hard to say no. So, I mean, public speaking and now here on bloody YouTube as well, and being every mistake I make in my talk can be rewinded actually and heard over and over again. And they can nail you down on that. Every little mistake you make, and you didn't say this right, and you didn't say that right. And if I wanted to, I can go completely crazy with anxiety, sitting in front of people, talking. What do I know? A lot of people are a lot older than me here. You should know better than me. Why are you not sitting here? You think this gives me any authority sitting here? Telling you something? No, it doesn't. I think the only thing that the only way I can justify that for myself sitting here is not that I tell you anything that you can read in a book as well. It's from my little experience that I have trying to put some of the practices of the Buddha into action in my own life. And that is obviously right thought. Sooner or later it has to kick in that you ask yourself, this train of thought, is it good for me? Is it going to help me in any way? Is it going to prevent anything? Is it good for others? Is it going to help anybody? And then if the mind is clear enough and has a close look, then it sees, no, that train of thought is complete speculation. The only thing that's going to happen is I'm going to become more anxious, become more fearful. And what happens if you become more anxious and more fearful? It costs energy. It costs a really huge amount of energy. And people who are constantly anxious, they are very likely to become sick. Because the body doesn't, it needs time, it needs relaxation to fix all the little stuff that goes wrong in the body. Huh? All the cells can do their divisions and whatnot peacefully and repair all the little things that happened during the day, huh, to your body. All the chemical processes that have to, there needs to be some peace for that, to do that. Anxiety and the chemicals produced with anxiety put a lot of stress on the body. So it's an initiative to see all this anxiety. We maybe think, oh, my anxiety is going to prevent something. I'm going to be alert, and so I can prevent things from happening. But I don't think so at all. The calmer, the clearer the mind is, the more aware you're going to be in a situation if there's any danger around. If you're anxious already, if you're fearful already, when the mind is already perturbed, it's already boiling, same as when you're angry, same as when you're in any sort of extreme mood, that's when the mind is the least clear. So, when anxiety comes up, I can tell myself, is there a real threat? Is this train of thought going to make you give a better Dhamma talk tonight? No? Okay, let it go. If it doesn't help me and if it doesn't help other people, we can let it go. And obviously we need this mindfulness, this awareness for that in the mind. But it's not that hard, if we have a little bit of meditation, and we see very quickly when the mind is a little bit of calmness, and then a thought comes up, we can taste the quality of that thought. Is it nasty? What sort of voice does it have? Is it full of goodwill or full of ill will? There's a sound to it. Our thoughts, they are in language. And some of you think in English or Chinese or Sinhalese or I don't know what dialect. Most of the time I think in English, not in German anymore. But my English voice and my German voice, there's no distinction to that flavor. It's either full of goodwill, neutral, relatively neutral, or full of for me anger. Then usually that's a big problem. Being aware enough to see what is coming up in the mind in each and every moment. There is not this fix that we can have for our mind. We have to do this and then you get rid of fear. I use the skillful means. I have to give a public talk, so I visualize you all naked. Ooh. you gain some right there in the back. So sure, we can use tricks for the mind to overcome certain fears, and there's nothing wrong with that. But in that moment where it counts, when something comes up, it's good to have the mindfulness in that moment. Otherwise, we carry this. Anxiety around longer than we have to. Seeing this is a thought, it's nothing more than a thought. It only has the reality of a thought. I have to wash my hands again and again and again because the evil germs, the germs. Oh, the germs. Huh? People, they have their hands scrubbed raw because they have to wash them over and over and over again. Huh? It's just salt. Huh? Salt is disgusting. Germs. Oh. And there is nothing there that can cut through that and see this is just thoughts. Huh? We need the germs. We are covered in germs. Huh? We have layers and layers of germs on top of us right now. Huh? We have germs and bugs in our inside actually to digest our food. We're made of germs. Huh? We live with germs for billions of years. Huh? The whole evolutionary process used exactly that environment to build these bodies. Huh? And the bacteria and the germs, they were around as the first guys. Huh? Everything else came later. So they're gonna be around in you. So why do we fear that? Huh? Why do we have these thoughts and they can become these obsessions? And this is we fixate on something. Huh? Fixate makes it our enemy. And tell that story to ourselves over and over again, and then we get into trouble. So to have that awareness in the moment when anxiety comes up, have that little bit of bravery to see how that does it feel in the body, that thought. Does it make me more peaceful? And I hope you develop that awareness in your meditation, that you can cut through these thoughts that are pure nonsense a lot quicker. Huh? And otherwise I don't see a lot of possibilities. Huh? The Buddha obviously says that the five precepts give us some security. Huh? Not killing living beings, huh? Not stealing, not breaking into other people's relationships, huh? Not lying, and not drinking. So obviously, if we have a mind that is not inclined to kill, that is a mind that also expects the people around us not to kill me so quickly. Huh? If my mind is inclined not to steal, I don't expect the people around me to steal something from me. Huh? So there's obviously this correlation between that this action of I call that guilelessness or non-guile, because harmlessness doesn't fit for me. Huh? Harmlessness, we say something is harmless, but what we mean is it's harmless for us. Huh? So I can say, oh, that spider is completely harmless, but the bug is going to disagree with me, huh? Because the bug is going to be eaten by the spider. Huh? So it's, for me, the guilelessness is the best translation I could find for a German word. And I'm not completely happy with that either, because it also, I think, later on it says something about naivety and childishness or something like that even. But it has a little bit more of this intent, huh? This intent of harmlessness, intent of not harming. Huh? It's not just that I'm not, by accident I'm not harming you because you're not in my way and you're not on my eating list. It's basically this intent of not causing harm to others. And that is actually a great safety net in the mind. If you get a little bit of of the feel of this non-harming and guilelessness. There is just nothing there that wants anything from you. You can feel safe with me. And if that feeling gets strong, the knowledge or the faith that you don't want to harm anything for a long time, that is a very great stopper of anxiety as well. This absolute sureness that, not that you cannot get angry anymore. I can get angry after 20 years now trying to practice, and I can get stupid and unfair and whatnot, but this, what I know in my own mind is that I didn't wish any harm to anybody for a very long time. It's not that I like everybody, I think there are lots of assholes around, actually. But I don't wish them any harm. And I don't treat them, I try not to treat them as an asshole as well. Try to do my best to, if I at least, if it's in the realm of my possibility, to be nice to them. And that's, and it doesn't cost me much. It's not because I want to be a good Buddhist. I don't care about being a good Buddhist. Absolutely not. I care about my own mind. And if I see that this thought brings me more suffering, then my mind shies away from that. And I don't have to tell my mind, mind, don't go there. Don't go there, mind. This is dangerous. Blah, blah, blah. Just have to see what is involved with keeping up my anger towards a certain person. How much suffering is involved with that? Seeing that clearly, actually my mind shies away from that. And then I see, no, I don't want to go in that direction anymore. So this guilelessness and encourage through the five precepts, through your generosity, maybe just the generosity to be kinder in a moment to somebody who is not kind to you can be generosity. But this can me personally can make me anxious to be the good Buddhist, because I don't want to be a doormat. I don't think it's a good thing just to take everything, just because I'm a Buddhist or because I'm in robes or whatnot. I don't have to say yes to anything. I want to be able to say stop. Here, that's my limit. No further. Don't want to punch you in the face, if possible. But I know that there's still violence in me. It's still there. And for me, the only way to deal with that stuff is not, I shouldn't have that. I'm in robes. Shouldn't be like that. That's not the way it is. I still have that stuff. You all have it. I know that. I know you. Anybody who thinks it doesn't have that is completely deluded, or he must be awakened already. It's just the way it is. Human beings, we have different desires, and the desires are going to clash with each other. You want this, I want that. I like this, and you like that, and then we both want it, and then it's going to clash. Why should you have it? I want it. So it's a condition that we are in as human beings with desires. And I see that. I can see my own desires, and I see also what suffering they can create. If you want something too bad and the other guy is in front of you and takes it, then there's suffering. It's just in the place in the food line where I am, there's a lot of suffering involved. All the other guys are in front of me. They always take what I want. Nonsense, actually. But it's that's where it goes. And obviously, you buy whatever you want, actually. In the monastery, you only get what is on the table there. And food becomes something very important than usually. Always what is rare becomes important. So, what you don't have, what you can't get freely. So the mind is gonna find its little ways to suffer, and then there's nothing we can do about that. It's only for me afterwards. I can contemplate. I can see. Oh no, it's not because that guy did this and that. It's because you wanted it a different way. You wanted it another way. And often I don't agree that we're not allowed to say something. Obviously, when the opinions clash too badly, then I think it's good to say something. But it shouldn't be from that point of I'm the clever one and you are the idiot or whatnot. If it's coming from that, there is obviously a conflict, and your opinion is there and my opinion is there, and then in a democracy, in a monastery, then we have to figure out how many people care about this issue, and then we have to discuss it, and then we have to find a solution. This is often not what happens in the monastery, because in the monastery we often try to be the very good Buddhists, and we don't have the conflicts, so a lot of stuff gets swept under the carpet as well, and that can be sometimes very unhealthy as well, in my opinion, especially if you try to sweep stuff under the carpet in your own mind. It's good to be aware of what is going on. It's good to know when maybe to distract one's mind with something more wholesome and when to confront an issue. But obviously, those of you with strong anxiety and fear, please stay on your medication and slowly work maybe with a bit of generosity, the five precepts, and this concept of guilelessness, of intentional harmlessness. See how that feels. How that feels in the mind. Thoughts like that in the mind when you do that in your meditation. Don't believe a word I say. Check stuff out, and if that works for you, fine. If it doesn't work for you, fine. But that correlation between the thoughts and the feelings, that is for me what tells me what direction it takes, and I don't have to read all the morality books and have to believe what Jesus said or what Muhammad said or what the Buddha said. It's this peacefulness has its own flavor. This is where things just become nicer and more beautiful, and conflict stops. And the conflict stops in the mind, where the body relaxes. That is always the direction that I'm willing to take. And that is, if I have any right perception about my surroundings, also very helpful for the people around me. The better I feel myself, the more happy I am, the less anxious, fearful I am, the more beautiful it is to be with those people. the less demanding I will be, because if there's inner happiness already, then there's less that we need from the outside. So that for me are an encouraging thought that can justify it for myself as well, that it's worth to reduce, or let's not say reduce, let's say see fear for what it is, see anxiety for what it is. It's never going to be more than a thought in the mind. Never, never more. And it's not even painful. Fear is not painful. Next time you have a little bit of courage and fear comes up, have a good look. How does it feel in the body? And if you look at it and you know from your meditation a little bit how to look with interest and a little bit of kindness towards fear, you will be really surprised, I guarantee you. Fear is not an unpleasant feeling. At least not for me. If I don't proliferate fear in my mind and just look at it, and you are aware enough to see that there is not some non-verbal inner monologue still going on that is going, oh no, but I don't want it, but I don't want it. If there is really some kindness and some interest in this feeling in the body in that moment, what is this anxiety? What is that fear? Yes, my dear, have a good look. Have a good look, my dear. And I call myself my dear often, actually. Maybe it's crazy, but actually I like to treat myself nicely most of the time, whenever I remember. And I hope you do the same, because your inner monologue actually is the one that determines how you perceive the world. If you call yourself idiot, an asshole, stupid, worthless, doesn't feel good. And it's not going to help you as well. It's not going to make yourself happier. It's not going to make other people happier. It's not going to reduce your fear. It's not going to reduce your anxiety. If the mind gets treated shitty, it's going to be an unhappy mind. Same as when you treat other people in a shitty way. They're not going to be happy with you. That's funnily, a lot of this inner monologue can be very brutal and very coarse and very unkind. So worth paying attention to what is going on in there. And yeah, I hope you have the courage next time something comes up that you consider to be anxiety or fear, or maybe a panic attack even. That's usually when you haven't caught that proliferation in the mind for quite some time. And it can build up, and then it leads to really this sort of where you can't breathe anymore. Have this weight on your chest. And then it's often obviously too late. But sometimes even in this moment, they force us to be very aware and very clear in that moment. And maybe even you cut in that moment soon. See, that's just continuous thought. There's nothing wrong with the fear or the feeling in the body. Thought. Undigested thought. So I hope that is a little bit helpful for working with your mind, getting a little bit experienced with dealing with these realities that we have to face as a human being. Anxiety, fear. It's just a condition that we're going to carry around until we are awakened. The way it is, the Buddha obviously cannot experience fear anymore, otherwise there's no point, then he wasn't, if he still experiences fear, then he obviously wasn't awakened and he's still suffering himself. The whole point is to have this model of somebody who achieved really the end of suffering. And question is, do we believe in that, that is possible, and do we believe that we know the way in that direction? So I hope you're all on the way, being aware of what's happening in your mind, dealing with it in a kind way, deciding as quickly as possible if something is good for you or not. And then the things that we can't change, obviously, often we have to let go. Can't do anything about them. We are in that position already, worse, old age, sickness and death. To put any extra fear into that, it's not going to help. It's just going to make us more miserable. I don't see the point. So, wow, I'm talking for an hour already. Amazing. Thanks for listening. That's it for tonight. If there are any questions, please go ahead.
Perfect talk.
A comment, more comments, thank you.
Hi, thanks for the talk. Could you comment a little bit about karma and using mindfulness to relate to fear or anxiety, and do we get lessons that we need from fear or from anxiety? I hope that makes sense.
I don't quite know what you mean with the karma business. How you want to use that actually with fear? I think a lot of the karma is misunderstood in Buddhism. Like I said, when being a good person or keeping your five precepts doesn't mean that nothing bad will happen to you or whatnot. But the way you experience it, that is definitely going to be changed. If your mind is a little bit brighter and a little bit more wholesome, the circumstances will affect you in a different way. Your karma vipaka, whatever comes towards you, is going to be felt in a different way. I mentioned that at the Amadeo group recently, I worked in an old people's home for a year, and by their upbringing or whatnot, some people are just very skillful in their mind, obviously. And you had this old lady who was bound to her bed, couldn't move anymore. But every morning, actually, you came in and you said, good morning, Anna. And, good morning, my dear. She was just the sweetest, happiest old lady you can imagine, And then you had these other old ladies, and they were just lying there and crying and complaining and whatnot. So the circumstances were exactly the same. They were both lying in bed and couldn't do anything anymore. But the mindset was so completely different. So, and that is what, for me, what karma, vipaka, the resulting actions of your skillful thoughts, of your skillful practice can do in the long run. That is, the mind can just deal with the circumstances that we have to deal with as a human being, with pain and with death and with loss and all that suffering. the way that it we deal with it in our mind is in the end the way we experience our world. Huh? And so I don't know if that is any helpful with the karma.
Chirapalo, you give a very interesting talk on anxiety. You know? Yeah. You see, in Buddhism, we believe in cause and effects. So don't you think we should be looking into the cause of the anxiety, you know, in the Buddhist sense? You know? Okay? The other sense is, well, you can see a doctor, you know, and they prescribe with medication. It's just like a temporary thing. So like in like cause and effect in Buddhism, okay, I was just thinking in terms of the few things. Okay. The first one is 12 links, you know. These conditions that anxiety, you know. This ceases, that ceases. This ceases, the anxiety ceases, you know. Okay, yeah. So a lot of all these things, okay, is on us, you know. It's mind or matter, you know. Okay, you know, okay. So what I mean is, if you look at the 12 links, so just quickly, okay, the 12 links, people say, oh, it's difficult, you know. In the 12 links, the first two is previous life, forget that, you know. The last two, 10th, 11th is next life, forget that, you know. If you look into the 3rd and the 10th one, people look at it, you know, you could see an answer, you know, what these all links do, you know. Okay, yeah, yeah. So the thing to do is change our lifestyle, you know. Get rid of the greed, hatred, delusion, anger, jealousy, envy, what I mean is the control freak, you know, all these negative things in us, you know, okay? And then you find that, what I mean is, you get rid of this thing, and then you lift yourself up, you know.
Are you asking a question, Eddie, or are you giving another talk?
No. I'm just trying to share this, you know. Do you believe in like a cause and effect on...
Sure I do. There's nothing else but cause and effect. There's always that game of cause and effect in the mind. But as getting rid of all that stuff, it's not so easy. You know? We have to see what is happiness and what is suffering, and what leads to more happiness and more suffering. And if we don't have that awareness in the moment, we cannot fix that sometime afterwards. Huh? Have to. That brightness has to be there in the mind to decide what is going on. Am I going in that direction or not? And sometimes we're too stupid to see it immediately, and hopefully we have the wisdom to see it afterwards, and that is a wholesome, unwholesome or wholesome direction in the mind. And the causes and if effects are happening. If I have more aggressive thoughts, my character is developed more aggressively. If I manage to see the beauty in having a kinder mind, then obviously the mind is going to be inclined to go in a kinder direction. There's always cause and effect. Huh? But the mind has to see what is pleasant, what is unpleasant. You cannot just force it or tell it, mind, you go here, you go there. That is that delusion of control and power. Huh? The beautiful thing is, if the mind sees this is suffering, it's going to shy away. We don't have to tell it anything anymore. It's just going to go away from it. If we see clearly in that moment, this anxiety is worth nothing. This anger is just harming myself and other people. If the mind sees that clearly, it's going to drop it. Huh? And that is cause and effect. Oh. John.
You said that you had an x-ray and there was spots on your lung. Now, say if that had been a cancer and you had to go to surgery, would you have wanted the doctors to wash their hands? Or?
Probably I would want the doctor to wash their hands, maybe even to wear gloves, but I wouldn't afterwards sit there and contemplate, did the doctor wear gloves or did the doctor wash his hands or not? Actually, oh my God, if he didn't wash his hands, maybe I have contacted something else. Or the most of the bugs you actually catch in a hospital. Oh no, I probably have a super bug. Ba 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 ba. That sort of suffering I can save myself. Huh? Sure, I would wish that the guy washes his hands. Huh? But it's the unnecessary suffering I create afterwards when nothing can be done anyway about a situation anymore, that where we can say stop mind, that's good for nothing, huh? I don't even know, maybe he wore gloves and maybe he washed his hands, huh? So yeah, there's another one in the room there. Yes, okay.
Thank you. I was just wondering, when you were talking about guile, you were talking about a German word that you wanted to use, but
yes,
didn't have a very good translation.
Arglosigkeit I was looking for. Okay. And the translation for Arglosigkeit is actually guilelessness, if you look in the dictionary. And the German word is more clear. That is basically the intention is involved in that act. Huh? It's not basically an incapability of causing harm. It's the intentional not harming. So yeah, Arglosigkeit.
Danke schön.
Okay, let's see in the room.
Question from Scotland. How do we deal with fear that is too overwhelming to cope with when you're in the middle of a situation where you're expected to function or perform?
Well, that is obviously a thought, isn't it? The question. Huh? What does it mean you're not capable of coping with it? What is going to happen? Are you going to explode? It's basically the fear of, if I cannot cope with it? If you're mindful enough, you see the question is not right. What does it not coping means? What? If I have to speak in front of people, the fear I create before I sit here, or when I sit here, it's just going to be thoughts. Otherwise, none of you is threatening me. Nobody's running towards me with a stick or whatnot. I can feel safe in that way. So the rest is happening in my mind. Where is the anxiety? It's just like, oh, people don't like my talk. Oh, Ajahn Brahm is going to cancel my ticket because I gave a shitty talk. Oh, my talk is too good. Now I always have to give a talk. That's basically, what does it mean? I cannot cope in the situation. You cannot cope in the situation when the mind is obviously not aware that your inner monologue is telling you some big fat lie. You will always be able to cope. Otherwise, you maybe fall flat on your back and lie there until you can cope again or whatnot. I mean, it's just... Question from Germany. Ah, I pressed the wrong button. Do you know where do I get that thing back? I didn't mean to. Thank you.
Beautiful.
That was quick. Death can be a painful process where you are helpless, which scares me. Any advice to handle the pain and helplessness? How to react in that situation? Well, now I can have a big mouth. I don't know how it feels. Maybe I shit myself as well when I'm on my deathbed. But the pain... I mean, take as many painkillers if you can in the first place, I would say. Whatever is available. Pain is very hard to deal with and can make you feel very helpless. I agree. I mean, the only thing that maybe you can pay attention to is when the mind proliferating about what hasn't happened yet. Huh? Does the pain get stronger? Oh, if the pain gets stronger, what I'm going to do if the pain gets stronger? Huh? How is it going to be, the feeling when I die? Is it even going to be more painful? Where am I going? Am I going to be extinguished? Am I going to go somewhere? So this questions, this anxious questions come up, and then the only way is that you hopefully have enough mindfulness to see this as thought, which creates more suffering, which creates anxiety in the mind. You don't know, we don't know, I don't know. I don't know how I will react. I have no idea. I'm not awakened. So I might surprise myself by reacting with fear and stuff myself. But it's, I hope I will be aware enough to have a good look when fear comes up in the mind. How does it feel? The pain you experience in the body is far more unpleasant than the fear if you allow yourself to experience it. So I hope you deal with as much kindness in your mind as you can, actually. But it will always depend on how well you have developed your mind in that lifetime, obviously. If you have a very worrying mind, then it's going to be very, very hard to cut through and see what is happening there. It's a strong habit. Last question from Lithuania. Fear comes up when getting deeper in meditation. How to reflect on this experience? Yes, isn't that an interesting one? People mention that very often. For me, that is a true indicator that people don't deal kindly with themselves in their own mind. This, I mentioned that with that what we haven't experienced, the unknown, is always the most frightful for us. What we don't know scares us the most. So when the meditation gets a little bit deeper, and it's you come to these moments where everything that was so sure before completely falls away. There's nothing there anymore that you can rely upon. Then there is something you can rely upon, and that should be that the kindness of the one watching the experience. If it starts with kindness from the very beginning, if that is not a guy, oh, shut up mind, shut up mind, shut up mind, Mara, be quiet, Mara. Dealing with all these sort of weird concepts in your mind and in your meditation, and treating the mind in a harsh way. Sure, you're going to shit yourself, actually, if you get into deep meditation, if it ever happens anyway. If that complete faith in your own guilelessness is not there, you're going to be afraid in your meditation. But that is also going to be the biggest refuge in your meditation. And just keep your intentions guileless. Keep the intention harmless. Be sure that you don't want to harm any living being intentionally for a long time. And if you have that in your meditation, it's going to be very, very safe. When nothing is sure anymore, then it's sort of, wow, that is a real golden string that where the mind can just, it just stays in that direction. It stays with that beauty of, I mean, letting go. How are you supposed to let go of something if you think there's something scary coming from the outside? There's nothing scary coming from the outside. It's when your own mind is opening up, but the trust in your own goodness is not strong enough, then fear is going to come up. So your guilelessness can still be improved. Your kindness in your meditation can still be improved. It's still might going to be a little bit shaky when the meditation gets deeper, but it's this faith in your own goodness is going to be the thing that is going to keep that uncertainty at bay. Huh? And hopefully you start your meditation with enough blissful power that the mind doesn't even look in that direction. Huh? The sequence of meditation is always through blissful states, through happy states of the mind. That is what makes the mind peaceful in the first place. And so if you're familiar with that happiness, and it's just stuff familiar with the feeling, and it's not, there's happiness coming, it's basically suffering falling away. There's always just suffering falling away, which makes you more happy then. And this letting go needs kindness, needs trust, and put more effort into the kindness of your meditation. That's what I advise you to do. Sure you fear, if you have fear coming up. And be aware how you treat yourself in daily life, how your inner monologue is going on. If that is nice enough, then in your meditation actually the trust will be there that you can deal with the fear coming up in the meditation. All right, I'm exhausted. You probably as well. Have a good night. Bye bye.